If this is your first time here, welcome. During our shows, we interview successful entrepreneurs and investors to spread knowledge, advice, and actionable tactics to help others in the pursuit of financial freedom. We discuss successes, failures, systems, motivation, experiences, and key lessons learned along the way in hopes that these stories help you along your journey. Tune in every Wednesday to get your weekly juice. If you've been here before and you like what you've been hearing, please subscribe, share with friends, rate, and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. That goes an extremely long way for us. It's simple. Just click on your podcast app, type in the podcast name, click on reviews, and let us know what you think. The more ratings we get, the more eyes we'll get on our show, and in turn, we'll be able to provide you all with high-quality guests. You can also find us on Instagram at Weekly Juice Pod for daily content and personal finance tips to assist in your journey towards financial freedom. Welcome to the Weekly Juice. This is Ryan and Corey here with another episode for you. Today we have on special guest Diego Corzo. He is a Forbes featured real estate investor and agent based out of Austin, Texas. He helps out investors achieve financial independence through real estate. He has an incredible story of perseverance, of honestly building his own American dream without citizenship. And it's just completely mind-blowing all the obstacles he went through to get where he's at today. And he just reached millionaire status in 2020 at age 30. So totally inspiring guy. We keep every episode we go through, I feel like, oh, this is our best episode. And it's hilarious. But this one specifically is, it feels like you're in a classroom just getting lessons thrown at you in words of wisdom. And so get out your pen and paper if you are not driving. And this is one you're going to want to write some notes on. Totally inspiring. Yeah. Cora, you want to jump in here?
Well, I mean, I just think about it. He paid his way through college, 22 years old. He had $0. By 26, he hit financial freedom. By 29, he was a millionaire. I mean, this guy put himself in a room where his net worth was $25,000, and he put himself in a room with millionaires. I mean, and then they just took a liking to him and said, hey, you have value to us because he was in IT and he could help them out in IT. And it's like, dude, he gives you so many nuggets of like how to get into rooms that you don't even deserve to be in. And then all of a sudden you're the person that you wanted to be. It's like, it really kind of like gave me chills at one point. I was like, it's inspiring. It really is. It's like, you deserve everything that you put out in the universe as long as you work for it. And I know that's kind of cliche, but he's living proof. So we should jump in here.
Diego, officially welcome to the Weekly Juice. We are very excited to have you and interview today. It's an honor.
Thank you for having me here. I'm very excited.
It's our pleasure. So if you could, please just give a brief background on yourself and kind of walk us through the story of how you got into real estate. I know it's a bit unconventional in your story. I just recently listened to a TED Talk you delivered talking about the American dream and how it can be achieved even if you're not a US citizen. It was absolutely incredible. It touched me. So I would love if you could share just, I guess, the SparkNotes version of that so everybody else can hear it.
Yeah, for sure. So basically, just so that the audience knows, so I am a dreamer and a DACA recipient, which basically means that I came to the United States when I was 9 years old from Lima, Peru. And then we overstayed our visas and we became undocumented immigrants. I didn't know what it really meant to be undocumented until I turned 15 years old when it was my turn to get my driver's license. I go to the DMV and then at that point, when they asked me the documents that are required, I found out that I didn't have them. And from that moment on, I knew that my life was going to be a little bit different than my friends, just because I wasn't going to be able to do the same things that they were doing. Fast forward through high school, graduated third in my high school class. I got into college. And as I was applying, I also found out that due to my immigration status, I couldn't qualify for any student loans or financial aid. So at that point, I'm like, okay, what am I going to do? I was able to get some scholarships and was able to go to Florida State for the first year. And while I'm going there, I got an internship. That internship that I was volunteering, they told me, Diego, you've done more work for us than some seniors do us in a year as a freshman. We want to hire you. I go through the hiring process. They say, hey, Diego, everything is looking good with your background check. We just need your work permit. I go to my parents and they said, Diego, we don't have a work permit. And at that point, so I'm 19 years old, cannot drive, cannot work, cannot get student loans, financial aid. But I was able to get resourceful, right? And in my TEDx talk, I shared that like I have the belief that the US is a land of opportunity, but it is up to us to find it. So that's always been like, I know that there's a way, I know that I can figure something out. And that's how I was able to find a way that I could create my own company. I began doing websites for small businesses. But in between that time, while I was in college, I read the book Rich Dad Poor Dad, right? And that book taught me two things, that you can either trade your time for money or you can make your money work for you. So I knew that no matter what my obstacles were, that I wanted to be, that I wanted to build wealth through real estate. And I wanted to get some passive income. So fortunately, when I turned 22 years old, that was 2012 when I graduated college. By this time I was doing websites for small businesses, riding my bike to and from meetings, all of that stuff because I couldn't drive. At 22, I was finally able to get my driver's license and my work permit due to the DACA program being created. And that is when I took off. I was able to get work with General Motors. They hired me as a software developer, moved to Austin, Texas. I worked there for 2 years before quitting. But in between that time, I also got my license to be a realtor. And fast forward, right, years later, and we can talk a little bit more about my story in between. But fast forward, I am now 30 years old. I still live in Austin, Texas, and I own around 20 doors so far. Became financially free at the age of 26. And I started house hacking, bought my first property when I was 23, house hacking at age 24, been living for free ever since. And it's been a lot of ups and downs, a lot of hassles, a lot of struggles, but for sure, with connecting with the right people, having the right mindset and taking action, is what I've been able to achieve, what I've been able to do.
Sounds like if you're kind of a story of, if anybody can do this, you're the poster child for that, right? I mean, we have people that, you know, don't go through the obstacles that you have. And a lot of people some people tend to make excuses. And that was the opposite of what you did. So it's extremely impressive. I'm wondering, you go from financially free at 26 years old. Now you're at 20 doors. You teach and you coach this to individuals, your six steps to FI. I think that's like right where we should start out, because you have kind of an outline for people that may be looking to reach financial freedom, and not a lot of people get to do it at 26 years old. So could you just talk about your six steps to FI?
Yeah, for sure. So now what I'm going to share is going to be something that it's not just something that I read through books or watch YouTube videos, but it's mostly because of the mentors that I've surrounded myself with. I've been able to be sort of like a fly in the wall in a mastermind of like 200 millionaires when I was like 23, 24 years old, when I met them. And then I applied everything that they did to get to where I am now. So those six steps to become the person that achieves financial freedom, right? And this is really important too, guys, because a lot of people, they want to get financial freedom and they want it, but I feel like first you have to become the person that achieves financial freedom mentally in your heart, and then you get that in the future, right? Because you have to build those habits, you have to build that momentum. So the first step is managing your personal finances. You have to know how much money is coming in, how much is coming out, so that you are aware of what your plan will be. Number two is scheduling personal development. That is something that listening to podcasts, going to events, joining mastermind groups, like scheduling that, YouTube videos, listening to podcasts like these is a perfect example that people can do that while they're running, while they're in their car. Number three is your peer group. You have to understand the importance of your friends, because just like Jim Rohn says that you are the average of the five people you surround yourself with, that is something that's really, really important, because those people are going to hold you to a certain standard. And that standard needs to become your norm. You can either go and complain about your life every day at happy hour, or you can or you can have different conversations where the norm is real estate investing, is pulling the trigger, is investing in real estate as like analyzing deals, submitting offers, all of that stuff. Number four is goal setting with accountability. So just like New Year's resolutions, that is not enough. The goal setting part is not enough. You need to be held accountable either with accountability buddy or an app or something, right? It's not just a, hey, I'm going to go work out 3 times a week, but it's more, I'm either going to have a coach there or I'm going to tell my friend, hey, if I don't show up to the gym 3 times a week, the days that I tell you, I'm going to give you $100. Now, when it's cold outside, you're not going to be like, I don't know if I'm going to go to the gym. I prefer to stay in bed. No, now it's like, do I really want to pay this guy $100? And so that's number four. Number five is increasing your income through a side hustle. You can have your job, but it is very important if you want to achieve financial freedom faster, you have to sacrifice a little bit and create a side hustle. Whether that is driving Uber, taking one of your skills. And for example, mine was web design. Even though I was making $60,000 as a software developer at General Motors, I still did websites through Craigslist, WordPress websites, all of that stuff. And then number six, the last one is investing. Now that you've managed the first five, the last one is investing for passive income. And a lot of people feel like they should go right at it, that they need to invest. But I feel like if you don't have the right mindset, if you don't have the right peer group, if you don't manage your finances the right way, you will create a lot of excuses, because investing in real estate is not easy. And there's a lot of naysayers. You're going to talk about it with your brother or with a family member during Thanksgiving or Christmas. And they're like, why are you doing that? You're so young. What about the tenants that are going to call you at 3 a.m? Like, they just see the excuses. And I feel like if you're not surrounding yourself with the right people and all of that stuff, investing, it's not going to go the same way if you just do it without the other five. So with investing, of course, there's multiple different ways. And I just happen to have chosen real estate from that perspective. And of course, starting through house hacking all the way to now, different ways that I invest, whether it's out of state or Airbnb and stuff like that.
That's incredible. I think people should write those down and use that as the blueprint if they're not ready to go with investing. I mean, you just spilled it and painted it a perfect picture, laid it out for everybody. So get your pen and paper out. I'd write those down, everybody. Diego, you mentioned a couple different strategies on real estate, but before we dive too far in, I want to know, why did you pick real estate? I know you read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, but why did you pick real estate as your primary investing vehicle?
I did that because I knew that it was something that I could touch. And it was something that I knew too, that it was something that would be able to appreciate and that I at least had a little bit of control over. That's it. But I mean, at the end of the day, if I wanted to put my focus in the stock market, I could have. If I wanted to put it into Bitcoin, back in the day, I remember when I was in college at FSU and I would hear conversations of some of my friends say, hey, did you know you can buy a pizza with 12 Bitcoin? And I was like, I had no idea what that was. But now, fast forward years later, that thing is crazy.
Yeah, 12 Bitcoin, no. You'd be buying a couple of pizza franchises now.
My gosh, for real, man. You would be buying the whole Domino's. So at the end of the day, for me, it was the example that in the book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, he shared an example of, hey, you can either buy a car for $20,000 or you can buy a condo for $20,000 and then use the income to pay off for that car. And that was a thing that for me, it triggered the, I need to invest in real estate because I want to collect assets that can pay for my liabilities.
Beautiful. I think that kind of ties into how you first got started. So once you decided that you wanted to get into real estate investing, we talk about this all the time. There's one thing to think about it. There's another to do it, right? You're 22. You mentioned that you had no money. So you decided to go the house hacking route. Can you take me back to the beginning and just talk about what it was like for you getting started and your strategy into the world of real estate investing?
Yeah, for me it was, so I read, I went to an event back in 2011, and it was an event called Succeed Faster. It was for college students, but there was a guy named Adam Carroll who said, you should build a bigger life, not a bigger lifestyle. And I applied that in my life. So whenever I moved to Austin, instead of like moving into a really nice place and all this other stuff, I rented a room for $500. At this time, I couldn't even drive yet. So it was close enough to GM where I could drive my bike. And, but I realized that that guy that I was, he had three other roommates and that we were covering his mortgage. And by that time I had already listened to a little bit of BP and like what house hacking was. And I was like, man, this guy's doing it. That's awesome. I'm going to do it next. So I began to save money for my down payment. Knowing that I would be able to, the goal was to live for free. The goal was like, how can I get my first, one of my first properties in Austin to be able to live for free? And then because of the fact that I couldn't qualify for student loans, right? I also graduated with no student debt. So that was a blessing in disguise because I did have to work my butt off, but it was worth it. And so I was able to save some, reduce my living expenses and put it all into my, put my future properties from that perspective. But I knew that at some, that the best way for me to get started in real estate was by house hacking, just because when I did my budget, right, as we go into step number one of the six areas, number one is like managing your finances. So when I look at my budget and I'm like, look, 30% or 40% is going to go to my living, to my housing. How can I eliminate it or have other people pay for it? And when I asked myself that, house hacking was the strategy to go for.
Cool. I think oftentimes people talk about that being the easiest and the best strategy to get started. That's how I got started too. And I think it kind of set the runway for me personally into buying new, more investments. So maybe we should build upon that and go to your, to talk about your motto and then your in real estate investing strategy from that. So you started out, you were house hacking, you were able to save money. Did you then put your money that you saved up directly into investments, small multifamily, single family? Can you talk about what you did next? Because once the snowball starts to get rolling, that's when the fun starts, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So basically what happened was I bought a house putting 5% down, right? Because a lot of people think that you need 20%, but when you're house hacking, you can buy it with 3.5% FHA or 5% down. So mine was 5%. Now, because of the fact that I had DACA, I had to speak with like 14 different lenders because nobody knew what DACA was at that point. I had no credit. And so it took me some time to be able to find a lender. And so I bought it putting 5% down. The house was 170. So with around $8,000, bought my house, rented out each room for 550, and my mortgage was 1350. So I was living for free and the extra $300 paid for my car payment. So while I was living for free and my bad debt, technically like my car, was getting paid by other people, everything that I made from General Motors, I was able to put into future properties. Now, the benefit of this too is that with house hacking, you can qualify for an owner-occupant loan every year or every 2 years. So after 2 years, I moved to the next one. Now I was cash flowing off my first property $1,000 and I was living for free in my second one and so forth. So that's where I got to for like a few properties in the Austin area. And then from there, my brother, who's a wholesaler in Jacksonville, Florida, I was able to connect with him and he found me a couple of deals in C-minus areas where I wouldn't do it again. Just because
you got started, which is great.
Yes, but it was necessary for me to get started. I was literally buying houses in 2015, 2016 for $25,000, $30,000 in Jacksonville.
Sounds like you might be generous with the C minus, but we'll go with that. That's okay.
Yeah, for real, for real. So, but the benefit of that was that now I don't bet for appreciation. I'm a cash flow guy, right? You do not become financially free by 26, let's say. by hoping for appreciation. You have to invest for cash flow. And this goes to everybody, whether you want to become financially independent by 30, 35, 40. You're not going to do it by investing it in your 401k, and you're not going to do it by investing it in for just appreciation. So the properties in Jacksonville did appreciate. So I was able to sell a few. Well, I sold them, bought them for around 25, and I sold them for 50 a few years later. And then I bought a quadplex in 2017 for 100K. I refinanced it. So I did a cash out and I didn't put any money in. So I was able to buy it for 100. It appraised at 115. I pulled out $73,000. And then I recently, about a month ago, I sold it. No, like 3 weeks ago, I sold it and sold it for 195. I haven't even done any CapEx. I didn't do anything, but I sold it because my brother was telling me that the market has been going crazy over there. And because I knew that it needed capital expenses in the future, in the near future, I was like, let me just sell it. And there was a buyer who bought it, who just drove by it. No inspection, no nothing, 195 cash in 2 weeks. So now I'm in the process of doing a 1031 exchange.
Got it. I think I'm curious about your specific investing strategy maybe now, because, and I want to get into talking about good debt versus bad debt, because we haven't asked a lot of people that question. But so I guess the first question would be, do you have a specific strategy that you like to, as you're a little bit more seasoned, you started out with house hacking, then you talk about buying some small properties in Jacksonville, then a quadplex. What is your niche now? Like, what's your competitive advantage currently?
Yeah. Where I'm going in the future is going to be into syndications and into potential partnerships with other people. I've done a couple of hard money loans with some of my friends too. So like they had a property. So I gave 150K, I'm giving 40K to another person. I'm doing it like 3 points, 10%. Cash, I mean like 10% interest. So that's one of the ways that I'm making my money work. But in the future, I'm going to invest it into syndications. Like I want to be a little bit more on the passive side from that perspective and go more as an LP now that I've become an accredited investor.
Can you dive into syndications? Because a lot of people get scared when they hear the word and they're just like, oh, it's extremely passive, but what does it actually entail and what excites you about it moving forward?
Yeah, what it entails is that it's more like you're getting a piece of the pie for like you're investing with other people. Let's say you invest 50K or 100K. And the plan is that the general partner, the person who's doing the acquisitions, is going to, there's going to be enough spread there to basically take the asset that may not be performing at like 100%, right? Let's say it's performing at 70%, but there's value add. Usually those are the best ways to invest into a syndication where you can add value and then do a refinance 2 or 3 years later. They give you your money back or at least part of it. And then that money continues, like you begin to continue making some passive income. But with a more coming as a limited partner where you're just like the money person, you do not have to answer to emails from the property manager. You're not having to deal with the day to day. It's more like you're just putting it into a quote unquote fund from that perspective, right? So that's going to be one of the ways that I'm going to be diversifying in the future. I haven't pulled the trigger on anything yet, but I'm also analyzing like my 1031 exchange. I'm going to be buying I'm going to McAllen, I think on Friday to see if I'm going to build, I'm going to buy a new build just because I don't want the hassle of like, and there's different strategies, right? There are some people like they want to like, they would take that 1031 exchange money and do the BRRRR strategy or something. I do not want that. I want that asset that needed CapEx. I'm selling that one and buying a brand new build that is not going to bother me for years to come. And it's just a way that I like strategizing, just because I have so many different things going on with my businesses. I am a realtor and I do that full time here in Austin. So that keeps me busy too.
Fascinating, because we've talked to a lot of people. You know, you're our 40th episode now. So we've talked to a lot of investors, and everybody has a different way of doing things. And all of the people that are doing them are successful. And I think that's what makes real estate beautiful, or just investing, you know, trying to become financially free in general, even without real estate, is there's just so many ways to do it. And we talked to a couple of weeks ago, an investor who's like, I don't believe in cash flow, only appreciation, right? But what he's doing for him works. So it's cool. And then you kind of find your happy medium, which I think is the most important thing here. That leads me into my next question about good versus bad debt. We haven't talked a lot about this, and you know, there's this, the Dave Ramsey people out there, and then there's the Grant Cardones who just keep recycling their money. I think personally, I feel like it's about finding your place and what works. But I want to hear from you, Diego, on what's your interpretation of good versus bad debt? And maybe somebody that's spinning like whirlwind, like, I don't know, should I get into $1 million worth of debt in real estate, or should I pay all my properties off? What's your take on that?
Yeah. So that really depends on what your goals are, right? Because for example, my goal when I was starting off, it wasn't, for example, to become a millionaire. I didn't care about the $1 million net worth, right? That's what some people that have the appreciation, they might care about that. I care more about the cash flow. So did I care if the property in Florida was going to go from 25 to 50? No. But what I did care was that it was making me $500 to $600 a month, right? Because I wanted that cash flow. Now, there's various different strategies depending on how you want to invest. But in the good debt versus bad debt, I would just tell that person, you have to do whatever helps you sleep well at night, right? And this is perfect. Like for somebody that's in there, like with a family, that has a relationship, whatever, you want to make sure that your spouse is able to sleep well at night so that you can also sleep well at night, right? I always tell people, is that you have to understand what your baseline is. You may have $20,000 in the bank. That doesn't, like, as your savings, that doesn't mean that you're going to be that you have $20,000 to invest. Because what if your spouse says, hey, as long as we have $10,000 in the bank, I do not care what you do with the money. You can put it into business. You can put it into real estate. You can put it into Bitcoin. As long as I have my $10,000 in the bank, I'm good. So then you have to tell yourself, hey, I only have $10,000 to invest. So that is your baseline. So what I would like to tell people to start is knowing what their baseline is and then deciding what their strategy is going to be. Because like you said, the Dave Ramsey route, they believe that like everything is debt, like every debt is bad debt, you shouldn't be in debt. I would prefer to see it as like, if I can get other people to pay for my debt, then that becomes good debt. And so if I can get into as much good debt as possible without over leveraging myself or still being able to sleep at night, then I'm all for that. So it's like, and it also depends, like with your job, how much money you're bringing in, right? Because there's a difference for somebody who's making $40,000 a month and then they get into $1 million debt. And now it's a little bit scary if they need to hustle to make the mortgage payments or whatever. But if somebody's making $200,000 a year,
right. Gotcha.
Yeah. Not $40,000 a month. Sorry. Yeah. $40,000 a year. Compared to somebody who's making $200,000 a year. Then from that perspective, you can invest in different ways, right? That $1 million bad good debt is not going to affect you as much if you need to do something. But it also depends what your savings rate is and all of that stuff. Yeah.
The clarification here is really important for people when they talk about, oh, I didn't realize that you can invest with no money into real estate. And your step one of financial freedom is getting hold of your personal finances. Just if you have no money, you should not be investing in real estate, right? That doesn't mean that you can't invest without your own money. I think that's a really important distinction, kind of something that you just talked about, because you really shouldn't be investing in real estate. you should, if you have 20,000 in the bank, you shouldn't put 20,000 into a deal, in my opinion, right? Unless you're like, it's a guarantee, which there are not that many of those. So I really like that approach. And I think for people, it's kind of about finding your happy medium with the good versus bad debt. And Ryan and I have shared our opinion on that on a couple occasions, but as we'll continue to do.
I just want to say how relatable that comment you made was about having X amount in the bank. My wife and I literally just had that conversation. She's like, you know, if we have X amount, I trust you to do whatever you want to do. And it's just so funny that you mentioned that, because I think people listening are going to be like, listen, I'm the same way. So when I have X amount saved up, now what do I do moving forward? And maybe that'll kind of move us forward here into in your portfolio. I'd like you to dive in there if possible and just lead us into why you chose your specific strategy starting out and then how you worked your way up.
Yeah. So I believe that everybody has their unfair advantage, right? Being here that I'm in Austin, Texas, prices have gone up a lot, right? Like homes have appreciated. The home that I bought for 170 in 2014 is now worth around 260, or like 280, which is insane to think about that. Like there's a house with the same floor plan that actually sold for like 300 or around.
You got to get to Austin, man.
So man, for real. So I'm going to end up what I'm saying. And then I have to share a story of like how crazy appreciation is here in Austin. But I feel like that was my unfair advantage, right? That me being able to buy a 4-bedroom home for low money down and, in a city that has been appreciating, because if you wanted to go for like the 1% rule, like a lot of people do, that doesn't exist in Austin. Like it stopped existing back in like 2013 or 2014. So that strategy of like finding your unfair advantage works well in real estate, but also in partnering with other people. So in the beginning, when I didn't have any money other than like for the property that I bought, which was my house hack for like that I put 8,000, my buddy that did have money, he was living in Colorado and he's like, holy crap, Diego, you can make a property in Austin cash flow 1,000 or 1200 bucks or more. Let's buy some. So I leveraged his money and he leveraged my expertise and my time. So I found the property. I was doing the property management. I was doing everything. And then we created a partnership in a way that it will allow me to buy myself into those deals and also be able to gain on the appreciation that was happening and also a little bit of the cash flow as I was paying him back. Now, that led to, for example, at some point we owned together 3 or 4 properties in Austin. Then we sold them. And then somebody else came to me and he's like, Diego, I've been doing Airbnbs in the Smokies for a while. Now I have a portfolio of 10. Do you have some cash so that you can partner up? And then I was like, cool. Now fast forward, right? Like back then I was the one that didn't have any cash and I had the time. Now this other partner, he is the one that's managing the deals and now he just needs some money. So now we're in different shoes. So that's how people can evolve depending as they go up the ladder or whatever you want to call it. Right now, my unfair advantage from this perspective is having a little bit of cash that I can deploy and partner up with him. And now we have a portfolio of like around 10 Airbnbs in the Smoky Mountains, where now from that perspective, I don't do much. He's a property manager. We have a team in place over there. And then we are reinvesting all of the money that comes in to buying more properties. So that's another kind of like business, quote unquote, that I have. But what's important from that perspective is understanding your unfair advantage at different times in your life. Maybe in the beginning, for somebody who's young and may have the time, and then you may partner up with somebody that has the network, that has the knowledge, that has the connections. So, and then years later, you might be able to partner up with somebody that has the time. And now you're the one with the knowledge, right? You just interviewed Andres.
Yep.
Yeah. Like he and I are in the same team. And he reached out after he listened to me on a podcast. he was saying that he wanted to get a mentor to help him in real estate. And I was like, dude, let's partner up because I can be your mentor and I needed help. So it worked out and now he's killing it. He has like a bunch of homes under contract and I'm very happy for him.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's a prime example. He's 23, right?
23.
Yeah. He's a prime example of just, he's putting
24. He's 24.
24. That's right. Sorry. He's putting his, we always say this, but putting his message out there. Right. And he just took the shot and he connected, like it was perfect timing. Yeah. And we're happy for him. Cause, obviously he's learned a lot from you. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah. It's awesome. And what was cool about that too, is that I told him, like, he's like, hey Diego, I want a house hack. I want to invest in real estate. And when you have connections, right? This is why I always tell people that you have to work with an investor friendly realtor or like somebody that has connections in your area. I had a builder that called me and he's like, hey Diego, I know you have buyers for 4 bedrooms. Who do you have? It's going to go on the MLS, but I want to call you first. So I was like, great. I call Andres and I'm like, dude, I know you haven't seen this property, but you have to trust me. It's $1,000 earnest money. Just do it. And he's like, all right. So he went to the builder and put it under contract. And now he's living for free.
We need
he
some
friends. He told us about that. He did. He was so excited about that deal.
Yeah.
So you mentioned, before we transition a little bit, I know Corey has one for you, but you keep mentioning connections and how important I always say this, it probably gets annoying, but your network is your net worth. Like, I love that phrase and it's proven true a lot of times for me and Corey already, and clearly for you. Can you explain like how you got involved in certain groups and how you built your connection and your, I guess just your web of people that you can call on an ongoing basis of like anything you need, whether it's like a mastermind group, just a local real estate group, like anything. How you found these people would be awesome to help others who are intrigued.
Yeah. I mean, the main thing, I just put myself out there and always wanting to bring value and building connections. Now I mentioned like building connections, right? And a great book for that is How to Win Friends and Influence People. But in me understanding that I have to connect with like-minded people, I put myself into those rooms. Right. This is something that I'm a big believer. This is something that I learned from Ty Lopez. I got the opportunity to go to his house after he made an offer from like at the Grand Cardone at the 10X. He's like, if you guys want to come to my house, $2,500 and you'll come for a day. I was like, sure. So I went to his house and one thing that stood out that changed. It changed my life just because of the way that of how he said it. He's like, a lot of people focus in the how, but not many people focus in the who. So he said, if you just focus in meeting that who next year or like once a year or once a quarter, your life can go to the next level, right? Because there's nobody who's self-made. If you look at Elon Musk, with Tesla, Solar City, whatever. If he wouldn't have partnered up with Peter Thiel to start PayPal, he wouldn't have been able to sell that company and invest it all into Tesla and Solar City. Steve Jobs, if he wouldn't have partnered up with Steve Wozniak, they wouldn't be Apple, right? So those are their who's. So the question for everybody listening here too is like, who is that who for 2021 that's going to take your life to the next level? For example, Andres was one of my who in 2020. And he gave me different strategies. He allowed me to help a lot more people. I got to mentor him, seeing him succeed. Felipe Mejia was another person that he was one of my who's because we connected and now we've created 2 other businesses. We're doing e-commerce and all this other stuff. So it's very important to understand the power of connections and putting yourself in a position where you can meet other people. Is it uncomfortable? Yes. Will it sometimes cost money? Yes. But at the end of the day, it's something that if you want to do it, you have to get into those rooms. I was fortunate enough to be in a room where I shouldn't have been. I was 23 years old and I found myself in a room of 15 millionaires, guys that were 40 million, 10 million, 5 million. And my net worth was $25,000. So I shouldn't have been in that room. But after me
that's
being
the best,
with,
that's the best time to be in that room, though, right?
Dude,
when you're the least smart person in the room, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So I found myself into that room and I had no connection other than what I did through social media, where I follow somebody on Twitter. Everybody else knew somebody that was in that mastermind group with GoBundance. And this was back when GoBundance was like 30 members and now there's 300. And they told me, hey, Diego, we created GoBundance for millionaires, but we want to help you out. We love your story. Would you be our first apprentice? And if a group of millionaires is telling you, we want to help you, I'm saying yes, no matter what. So after that weekend, my whole life changed. I turned 24 years old at that event. And now I saw the power of connections. I literally saw the power of your network is your net worth because of the fact that all the conversations, everything that was going on, I knew that I was in the right room and I trusted that if I did what they told me to do, what may have taken them 10 years, it might take me 5. And then I just took action on what they told me.
Okay. I don't know if this is just fate, destiny, whatever you want to call it, but it's very strange that I'm talking to you today because this is the book that I'm currently reading. It's Tribe of Millionaires by the guys that started GoBundance, which is insane. Yeah. And I've been on the website all day. I'm like, how the hell do I get involved? This is amazing. And can you just explain, I mean, I'm a little kid in a candy store here right now because that's the coolest thing I found out today. But can you explain how you landed in that room? And then I don't know if you know kind of the difference. I know you said GoBundance was really small back then, but like how it's evolved. And if you know kind of any stake in that, if you're still involved, et cetera, would kind of be open to that story. Would love it.
Yeah, dude. I mean, they changed my life. So it started by listening to a podcast with Pat Hyben. I was working at General Motors and I noticed that like, I can either, while I'm working 8 hours in my desk, I can either be listening to music while I code websites, or I can listen to content, right? Again, scheduling personal development, listening to podcasts, what I preach of those 6 things is what I do. So I listened to a podcast called Real Estate Rockstars with Pat Hyben. I followed him on Twitter. And after every single podcast, because it was just starting, I tweeted at him and I thanked him for what I learned in that episode. And one of the episodes, he mentions the power of your peer group and the mastermind. And so I reached out to him as in a DM and I was like, hey, Pat, my name is Diego. I'm 23 years old. I'm in the process of getting my license, or I just joined Keller Williams. What is GoBundance? And he's like, it's a tribe of millionaires, a tribe of entrepreneurs who like to, that follow financial freedom, accountability, adventure, and contribution. And I was like, holy crap, I went in. And so I went to the website and I submitted a form. After a couple of days, I get on a call with a guy named Tim Rode, who's one of the authors, I think, of the book. And I shared my story and I mentioned Jim Rohn, a lot of like, I just mentioned a lot of his quotes because like I'm reading all about it. And he says, all right, Diego, let me see what I can do because this is a group for millionaires. So then he calls me back and he's like, all right, Diego, we want you to come. Here's our invitation. It's going to be in August. You're going to be one of the only ones that's not a millionaire, but just come and check it out. And I was so excited. And a few of my friends were like, Diego, why are you going to spend so much money to go into that event? Is it an MLM? Is it a pyramid scheme? You don't even know them. Are you sure they're not like, you're just going to go to a random house? And I was like, yeah, dude, like, this is going to be a great event. Like I could just feel it. And, so I go to that event and that's when everybody's introducing each other. And they're saying what their net worth is, what they do, their business. And when they come to me, I'm like, my name is Diego. I'm 23 years old. I'm a software developer. I own one property and my net worth is 25,000. And they were like, who the heck is this kid? Right. And, but after that weekend, just like I was saying, they allowed me to join their group. And again, unfair advantage. It was just starting. And they needed somebody who could handle some of their IT work. So that was my unfair advantage, right? These are all like people that are older, and then comes these 23-year-olds that can do websites, that can do email campaigns, all of that stuff. So I helped them out and they helped me immensely. And when I say my life changed, like 2 weeks later, Osborne said, "Hey, Diego, we're going to run a Spartan race. Do you want to come?" And in my mind, I was already creating excuses because I was like, I already took 5 days off of work. It was my first, like I had just started working, and I'm telling him this, and he's like, "Diego, I don't need to hear your excuses. You can come in my private plane and it'll be okay." And I was like, "All right, I'm going to say yes." So then I went to my manager after that event and I was like, "Listen, Brett, I really need to go. I'm sorry. Like, I know I just took off 5 days, but I need to take off another 3 or 4. And he's like, "Just go, just go." So we literally left on his private plane in Austin. We stopped in Dallas, picked up a few of his buddies. Then we stopped in Virginia or in Philadelphia, picked up a few of his other buddies, and then in Virginia to run the Spartan race. And my mind was like blown. Imagine, like, I grew up with nothing. Like in 2012, like I couldn't work or drive legally. 22, 23, I'm in, by 24, I'm in a private plane with these guys. Like my mind is blown. And yeah, so it's been incredible. And if you read that book, my story, if you go all the way to the end, there's 6 stories that are featured at the end. And I am one of those stories. And these guys have helped me immensely, like giving me more confidence. I used to have a super large speech impediment. So I stutter. I haven't stuttered much here in this podcast, but I've gotten comfortable in sharing my story. But it was in putting myself in situations where they were the ones like, "Diego, your story is powerful. You have to do it." Like I used to skip class. I used to skip like speech classes so that I didn't have to speak. And then fast forward years later, like I'm giving a TEDx talk, right? It's like crazy. But there's different strategies that I've had to do. And I'm sorry, I'm talking on this when it's real estate. But like one of the things, in order for me to not go through the stutter, I have to memorize things. So I had to memorize my whole TEDx talk, my whole 13 minutes word for word, so that my brain didn't think about what was coming next. I just spoke it. So I practiced hundreds, if not 1,000 times, my talk. And just so that when I could get on stage, I didn't, like, it just came out. So yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, right, you have to do what you have to do to achieve your goals. Get resourceful. There's always a way. And are you willing to work a little bit harder to get to it? Right. I mean, I don't, and my story with the guys in GoBundance, they asked me to be in it. And I'm like, "Dude, I'm not a millionaire yet. Why will you want me to be in that, like in that book yet?" And he's like, "Dude, it's because of your story. Like your story is the thing that inspires." And yeah. So fortunately this year, or in 2020, I did become a millionaire at 29, and I was able to, now I can share, okay, now I'm in the tribe of millionaires. But yeah, but it goes to show that I have become, like, I already became a millionaire. I already became the person that achieves financial freedom. It just took a little bit of time to get that into my bank account, to get that into my pocket, right? But the habits and everything was already there.
You're talking about the power of people. And it's like, it's wonderful, because if you put yourself in the position to be with the people that you want to eventually be like, it's literally like magic, and you eventually get there, and here you are, you're the one teaching, you know, some of these lessons. And I bet as a 22-year-old, you couldn't fathom what you're doing today. So it's a tribute to your hard work and Rise signaling. He's like, I got one.
I just want to plug the book, because I'm not sure if I said it. I showed it, but I'm sure a lot of people will be listening, whether they're driving or not. But the book is called Tribe of Millionaires, and it's a New York Times bestselling. Well, it's by a few New York Times bestselling authors: David Osborne, Pat Hyben, Mike McCarthy, and Tim Rode. And the foreword is by Hal Elrod, and
who's Miracle Morning.
Miracle Morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who, yeah. Andres recommended to us. So I think this is kind of strange how everything's coming full circle here. This was not planned. So
yeah,
I'm a firm believer in things happen for a reason. So incredible story on that. Thank you for sharing. Corey, you can jump in, but I'm still juiced up thinking about all this stuff.
Yeah. Well, I guess I want to just, obviously we respect your time, but I want to tie into freebuy26.com a little bit here, because you, like I said before, you started this website, and I'm curious what the full premise is. Obviously, yeah. Becoming financially free by 26 years old, but now you teach millennials that your biggest obstacle can be your biggest opportunity. Can you just talk a little bit about that and how you frame money for millennials who there's kind of a stigma out there that millennials don't know how to handle their money or
some people. Yeah. So the website Free by 26, like that brand, is actually now called Rat Race to FI, where we are helping people. So if people can go to ratrace2fi.com. It's basically getting people to have that mindset of how they can escape the rat race to become financially free. And the thing is that you don't have to, like, you just need to have a goal. And then with real estate, it's like, it is possible. You just have to commit to it, build whatever plan you want to do, right? But at the end of the day, is helping people, just like the mentors in GoBundance have helped me with Rat Race to FI. My goal is to help them achieve financial freedom and reach their true potential. I feel like that is my why in being able to help the millennials out, the people that may think that they may not be able to invest in real estate because they do not have the 20% down, right? Like, I need to build education for them. Like, we all need to, like, you guys are doing a big thing here too with your podcast. It's like just giving the education out there so that people can take action, right? And with Rat Race to FI, we have a mastermind group that basically gives people accountability so that they can get over the analysis paralysis. And it's perfect for millennials, for people that are just getting started, so that they don't just listen to naysayers, but they get into a group where investing in real estate is the norm. Like, buying a house, at least one home a year, it's the norm. That is the standard. And I feel like that has allowed me to impact a lot of people in changing their mindset with the perspective that, like, look, if I can do it, right? I'm an immigrant and I'm undocumented, so I can even share that because I am a DACA recipient, and there's still challenges. Like, my permit expired on my driver's license. My permit was expiring on Saturday, and I got my paperwork over the weekend, and which allows me to be here in the United States without fear for another 2 years. But if I can do it, anybody can do it, right? Especially if you're here in the United States with a green card, American, whatever. It's just a matter of, are you willing to let your excuses stop you from what you really want?
Cool. We talked briefly about how you fund your deals and kind of your, now that you've reached a level of private lending. I kind of want to go back into the nitty gritty a little bit for one of our last segments and talk about your portfolio and the marketing and how you find deals, because it seems like they may be coming to you now, right? But there was this time frame where you had to kind of do the homework and do the hard work. So how did you build? And I know it's kind of like we broke the segment up here.
Yeah.
How did you build from the 0 to 20, and maybe along the way, just, we know how you did it, but how do you find deals at this point, in the past couple of years?
Yeah. So for sure, it's understanding what your strategy is. To give you an example, in the beginning, my strategy to find the 4-bedroom homes where I could rent out each room for like $700 and cash flow $1,000 a home, it wasn't like, hey, I need to rehab. For us, it was, we need to find a property that would be able to rent from day one. So maybe it needed to have upgrades. Maybe some people might say, hey, but why would you pay a premium for a property that was recently remodeled? And it was like, because my goal, it wasn't to do a cash out refi or to do whatever. My goal was to make cash flow from day one, right? So analyzing deals that fit your criteria. Talk to investor-friendly realtors, talking to wholesalers. You have to put yourself in a position where you can get deals thrown at you so that then you can take action depending on what way you want to invest. So that's the way that I did it, and that's the way that I would recommend people to get started. I just don't feel like some people feel like, oh, deals are just going to come through like to me. And of course you believe like in the law of attraction, right? Deal comes to me, whatever, but you have to put yourself out there. So the deals that have come to me have been by putting myself into conversations, into groups, into whatever, that then they look at me as a resource, whether it is me as their hard money lender or as their partner, or also I'm also a realtor, right? So there's different opportunities that I have for my clients, just like Andres, right? Andres, he may have been analyzing deals great, but then I get a call that I know will be perfect for Andres, and then I connect him, and then boom, now he has a property. So I would say definitely putting yourself out there to get potential to get deals.
Cool. We have a couple segments left in the show, and yeah. One of them is called our core four. And actually, I think officially this is our first week doing it. So we were trying to do it on our last episode, didn't get to it. But and our core four is, the first one is what is your favorite book? It can be real estate. We mentioned a great book in the episode already, but what's your favorite book that got you in the mind frame of trying to reach FI?
The book that got me into the mindset to reach FI was Secrets of the Millionaire Mind. Like, I could tell you Rich Dad Poor Dad. Yes, that one is true. That one is amazing. And that's the book that I would have recommended, but since we already mentioned it, Secrets of the Millionaire Mind gets you into the perspective of thinking in a different way of how to look at money. And I feel like that's a great one.
Cool.
Awesome.
Haven't heard of that one. Go ahead, Ryan.
Number two, what's been your biggest mistake you've made along your journey, and how have you learned from it?
My biggest mistake is not putting the right
operating agreement. By the way, we're finding this out.
No. I mean, of course I made some mistakes for sure, but I'm trying to think of one that like, that would be like really great to share. Would be the, I didn't have an operating agreement or like an understanding with two of my business partners. And, it was a lesson that I learned that was like around $1,300. That's how much it cost me technically. But it was because we didn't have the right operating agreement. I did a couple of things, just to be nice. And then when we come to sell the house, he was like, hey, actually we never had that in agreement. We are all 33 partners. And I was like, no, because we have equity. And he's like, no, but we split the cash flow in 33. And I was like, yeah, because there was little cash flow. There's no point in us splitting $50 here or $60 there. So at the end of the day, because we didn't have an operating agreement, I ended up losing a little bit of money. It wasn't a big deal, but I wouldn't do that again.
Got it. I think that's good. That's a good advice for people, because a lot of our listeners and guests talk about getting into partnerships, and you just have to have it spelled out. And Ryan and I learned that at the beginning, that it's got, the operating agreement's got to kind of speak to the partnership. So the third question is, and this is kind of almost like where you're going in the future, right? Mm-hmm. How do you know when to stop? How much money do you feel you need to be happy? And the reason that we frame this question is because you can keep going and going and going for more. And then at what point do you say, I'm good, or I feel like this is a comfortable place for me to be? That's kind of putting you on the spot, I realize, but yeah. Any advice on that?
Yeah. So the question, because you mentioned happiness. So can you reword the question again?
Yeah. So I guess it's how much money do you feel like you need to have coming in through passive real estate that you're in a position that you can be content, I guess.
Yes. And happiness is an interesting word, right? Because, and since you guys mentioned Hal Elrod has a quote that says, you should be happy with the life that you have as you pursue the life of your dreams.
Love it.
Right. And I'm a big believer in that because happiness is a choice. Money doesn't bring you happiness. Money just buys you options. Right. And that's the reality. So you can be sad with money. You can be happy with money. But for me, being able to be content, it doesn't have to be a money figure as long as I'm pursuing my potential. If I'm giving up my potential because of money, then that's going to be a choice that I will have to make. But I feel like if you're not fulfilling your life to your true potential, you're sacrificing the gift of life. So yeah. And that's a quote from Prefontaine too. Yeah.
Love it. These are tough questions, we realize.
But I love them, right? I love these kind of things because at the end of the day, money, this year or last year, I sold 56 homes. I made
really
good money. Thank you. Yeah, like it went well and I've been able to create other businesses and I'm helping a lot of people, right? But what I like more than the money's great, but it's more like the being able to help other people and seeing their lives transform, that's what brings me happiness. Like that's what makes me do what I do. It's not just selling another house. So I feel like if we focus more in doing the things that makes us happy, then we will be okay. And knowing that if you impact a lot of people, if you're providing value, you will get paid. Jim Rohn says you get paid what you bring to the marketplace, like the value that you bring to the marketplace. So I'm a big believer in providing as much value as possible.
You're like a walking book of quotes. I love it.
Yeah.
And they're great quotes and they're perfect.
Scheduling, personal development.
Love that. So, all right, I'm glad you like hard questions because mine's tough, but you kind of answered it, I think, in that last one. What do you want your legacy to be?
My legacy is going to be to create impact from the perspective of helping people achieve their version of the American dream.
Beautiful.
Love it.
The last segment of our show is called The Last Drop. And we changed it up a little bit. What we were asking, it used to be a resource for people, but now it is going to be, what advice would you give your younger self?
The advice that I would give my younger self would be to focus on getting to first base rather than hitting home runs in the beginning.
I love that personally, because you can get caught up in trying to find the home runs and they're a lot fewer and further between. But if you just keep hitting singles, I think that a lot of people find themselves in the exact place that they want to be. So we love that. I think this has been awesome. Your knowledge is, it's evident why you got to the place that you are now. It truly is. So we really appreciate it. If people want to get in touch with you and learn more about you, you know, feel free to plug away at some of your brands here.
Yeah.
What's the best ways for people to get in contact with you?
The best way is Instagram. So it'll be @RealDiegoCorzo and then checking out the website ratrace2fi.com.
Excellent. We'll be sure to tag your handle in the post and we can link your website as well. So everyone listening, no need to write down. We'll post everything to our Instagram and you'll see it here shortly, coming up here soon. So Diego, personally, I'd love to just thank you for this episode. It's been amazing. I think it's just super enlightening overall. I feel like I just went to class and you talking about Tribe of Millionaires. And it's just insane that I got up early this morning at 5:30 to read the book because I'm in Miracle Morning time. So it's just crazy how things work. And I appreciate your time. And like I said, I think things happen for a reason. So it's a pleasure getting to know you. And I think you blessed our listeners this week.
Totally.
Awesome. Well, I am very grateful for this opportunity and I look forward to staying in touch.
Thanks, Diego.
Thanks.